Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 84. I almost fucked that up. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, I have no idea where this is going to go, but based on how we just started talking before this thing, I can't wait to get into this. So please go ahead, name and who you are.
Hey, hey, everybody. I'm so honored to be on the Calgary Sessions. I go by the name Sincere. I'm a rap funk artist here in Calgary. Grew up here. I'm an activist as well, all around life lover, music lover, and happy to be here.
Awesome. I also told you that my buddy Tom Mannix shared this Instagram reel of you yesterday. And I was like, what are the chances? He's like, and I think his post said something like, Calgary artist. So it was, it's meant to be that you and I are talking today because there's no reason that Tom would ever, like, it's all connected.
I believe that. And you know what? Shout out to Tom.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Okay, let's go. just the show. I like the guests to kind of go back and tell their journey story.
Okay.
You know, how they grew up, where they grew up,
okay,
what inspired them, what got them going at a young age. And then we'll kind of weave a path to where you are today. So
Okay. Your
musical background is going to, I'm really interested. So yeah, take it back as far as you want to go.
Okay. Well, born Calgarian. Mom's from the Caribbean. She's from Jamaica. Pops is from the Caribbean. Unfortunately, he wasn't in my life just due to addiction. My mom was a single mom, hustled, had her own traumatic childhood and, you know, kind of did the best she could as a single Black mom. And I kind of had a tumultuous upbringing to a degree, went through some tough things as a young person. But ultimately, music was kind of like the medium where it helped me identify with who I am and who I wanted to be. And it was kind of like this safe place for me. It's where I could go and like get away from a lot of the things that were happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
I have four siblings.
Mm. Where do you fit in the mix? Young, old, middle?
I am the middle child.
Okay,
yeah. I am middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
Shout out to J. Cole. And all around, always been sort of like an upbeat, positive person, mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, high vibrational, despite, you know, kind of things that I've gone through that have been traumatic.
Yep.
Music has kind of always kind of been there in the background. Yep. Oh, I would listen to the greatest artists of all time.
What was your first kind of musical memories? Who were there? Mm. Where were you? What song was it or band or what was it?
First, like, solid musical memory. My mom would always play a lot of funk in the house.
Awesome.
And, you know, and a lot of R&B soul. Like, she loved Luther Vandross. Mm-hmm. She loved Freddie Jackson, SOS Band, Cameo. Like, just, like, these artists and these bands that just had, like, the richest taste mm-hmm. and sound and, like, so much color and texture to what they were doing. And so as a kid, I'd hear, like, all of this great music. And,
just in the background or whenever she was like, doing whatever around the house? Pumping?
Oh, when she was, my mom was what you would call like a cougar. So like, back in those times, like she was very much so if she was getting ready, like, you know, to go out with her girls or whatever it is, you know, I have this, you know, envision of her all gold decor, you know, those couches from the 90s that everybody had and you know, the panther. Everybody had a shark back in those days, the miniature shark. And just a little Freddie Jackson subtly playing in the back, you know, and her doing her makeup or her mm-hmm. hair or dancing. She is very animated that mm-hmm. way. So just, and then it would go from that to like going to my grandma's very hardcore Jamaican lady. She'd be playing 45s, and Barris Hammond and Bob Marley and like the Wailers and some of the greatest reggae artists of her era.
Cool.
And just this fusion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Something you can like hear, like it was just like this, like this vibe and this tone just everywhere you went.
Yeah. You know what? There's so many different beautiful artists that were the soundtrack to my childhood. Mm. And by the time I, you know, got into my teenage years, obviously that soundscape began to change.
Yep.
You know, gangster rap was more prominent and R&B turned into kind of like R&B soul, hip hop, kind of, you know, Mary J. Blige and Faith Evans and, you know, Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, Tribe Called Quest, Busta Rhymes. Like, you know, the soundscape of music started changing and speaking to the times for that generation. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
Yeah.
What else was going on when you were growing up? Music, reading sports, were you like, school, did it fit with you?
Or
you
hated just, school.
Yep.
I found it to be so boring. Mm. And I just knew because I knew my spirit was just calling for something much more profound. Yep. Though education is very important to me, you got to have a foundation. Mm-hmm. And I believe you have to have a certain level of skill in order to do anything you want to do out here, essentially. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, music, I think in high school, it was very much so I started my own dance group. And so it was fun at first. It was just like, cool. Like just meeting the homies.
Yep.
That translated to us getting booked for shows across Canada. And
really?
So, yeah, I'm like, it was an accident, but it was cool. I mean, we made a little money.
Did you choreograph it?
Yeah, we did all of our own choreographing and all that.
Cool.
On our own.
That feeling you had at a young age that there was something different or something.
Yeah.
Did you know it was going to be like musical? Did you realize that school just wasn't the avenue? It didn't have exactly what you were looking for? Like, what was that feeling?
It was always musical.
Always? I mean, like, you just knew?
I just, as a young girl, like, even 5, 6, I would, like, roll around in my room alone. I was very much so by myself a lot. My mom always said, I laugh when she says it, but she goes, the first three years of your life, you didn't say a word. Excuse me, say a motherfucking word. You were quiet. Like, I thought you were a mute. Mm. But anytime I played music, she could just tell it took me somewhere else. Mm. So by the time I'm like 5, 6, 7, I'm learning and hearing this great music and I'm sitting with it alone in my room singing these songs and like, you know, fake performances for my rag doll and like things like that. So it's always been music for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where does it start going? High school? So what do you call it? Dance? Was it like a group?
Or yeah, Rebel Squad. That's what we were called. Okay. We were called Rebel Squad. Okay. Just high school friends. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And what were you dancing to?
Experimenting. Oh, everything. Dance hall, hip hop, R&B, whatever. Mm-hmm. If there was a beat or a drum, we were on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was that the first time that you were kind of performing in public? And
yeah, you know what? I can remember.
Like, were you shy at all? Like, when your mom said you were quiet?
I'm more shy now. I would say I'm more shy now. I'm much more of an introvert now.
Well, that's gonna twist people up.
It does because when I'm on stage, you cannot tell that.
I've seen a clip.
We were like, "There's no way. There's no way." But I think my earlier years, I was very much so quiet and very much so introverted and operated inside of myself. But I think my teenage years, music, that medium, and dance was really that first medium where I started to explore my identity and started to explore who I am. And it just brought out this confidence in me that was like, as a dancer, I remember being 16 and before Flame Central, it was the Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to do all ages there.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have like these dance battles and I would just go in the middle and tear that shit up and win every time.
No way.
Yeah. And so there was just this, it wasn't so much so the cheers for me. It wasn't like people knowing my name. It was the feeling of expressing myself through movement.
Mm.
It was just a high for me.
Because it's like freeing.
Yeah.
As an introvert, you're kind of like, you're guarded. You're kind of, you know, you're watching more than talking. But you get in those environments, you can just like, it's all got to come out.
Yeah, because I think for me, I wasn't very expressive as a child. I unfortunately internalized all of my pain and hurt and trauma, which is extremely unhealthy. Kids, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I started using dance as a medium, it was just like, it's like all those feelings came out when I danced, you know? And, and to me, that was just, like you said, it was so freeing, so liberating.
The gangster rap thing, I was like, as soon as you said that, I was like, my gangster rap is NWA. Mm. So I was 13. I was having my 13th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what grade that is, 7 or something. And one of my buddies bought me an NWA tape.
Yeah.
And it was the first time it said like a parental discretion. I think my parents either didn't see the sticker or just closed their eyes around the sticker. But you said that, and that was like my story of going, that was my like throwback to that era.
Yeah. Crazy thing is, they were the first group. They're the reason why parental advisory stickers exist. Them and Uncle Luke.
Because
the music was just so explicit.
It's crazy.
So telling.
What's your, this is totally off the path here, but your knowledge around musical history. Are you kind of well-versed in?
I think I'm pretty well-versed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just based on all the names you've been like.
I would say I'm pretty well versed.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to think so. But, you know, I'm sure there's people who could take it further than I could. But I'd like to say I'm a connoisseur of all genre, all time period.
Does it does that kind of help shift or shape how you do it, you know, what you do and how you do it, and how, you know, where you're going to keep going with it?
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Like, when I first started as a hip-hop artist, I was kind of very linear. It was kind of very, like, this kind of one way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't known too much up and then. That was mm-hmm. a sum total of my experiences of what I was listening to and kind of the influences around me as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, presently, it's like, I'm just like a ball of everything.
Awesome.
And I love that. I love that.
So what's going on in high school? You're dancing across the country.
Yeah.
What else is happening?
Yeah, I'm dancing. And
where'd you go to high school?
I went to Lester B. Pearson.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm dancing. I end up going to my homie's house one day. His dad is someone who's kind of known in the Caribbean community out here. He owns several different businesses. And his dad had a friend that came from the same part of Jamaica that my family's from, which is St. Mary's. And his name was Blacka. He went by Blacka Ranks. And he was like the baddest sound man ever to play records ever.
Awesome.
I was 16 and I met him. I remember walking into my friend's basement. I just hear the dance hall booming. And it took me away. And he was so animated. Mm. And he was so much himself. Like he never cared. He just had this energy. I'd never met anybody like him. Mm. And I remember walking down and he looked at me and he goes, "Wagwan." And I'm like, "What's up?" And he's like, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm a dancer." That's what I was doing up until that point. And he kind of looked at me and paused and he said, "No." He said, "You're a DJ." And I thought to myself, okay, like I'd never even entertained the thought of like being a DJ ever in my life. Like, so, but it kind of like, I was like, kind of like, okay. And
it's an interesting first like impression, right?
Yeah, like, cause I'm like, no one ever spoke to me this way, let alone declared who they thought I was. I mean, I was a kid too. So it was like, it kind of hit me hard. Like, am I a DJ? I kind of entertained it a little bit, I think.
I guess maybe.
You know, and his presence was just so powerful, you know. And I remember a month later, I begged my mom to buy me these turntables.
No way.
From Long McQuaid.
Like 12s?
Yeah, CDJs.
Oh, CDJs.
Yeah. Mm.
See, I'm...
800s, I think they were.
I dated myself. I bought 1200 techniques.
Oh,
that's where. So when I started DJing, it was 12s were the thing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But evolution, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's all part of it.
So you asked your mom for CDJs?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And
at first she said no, but then she was convinced. She got me them.
No way.
I took them home, unboxed them, and I just started pushing buttons. I accidentally became a DJ. And I started playing parties. I started playing little basement parties and your friend's birthday. And, you know, and eventually it grew. And I started doing the biggest reggae parties in the city.
Cool.
And then I started getting flown out. And then I started mixing it with R&B hip hop. And then I became Western Canada's number one DJ at the time, female DJ. And that to me, I'm like,
No way.
I'm like, what? Again, I didn't plan it. It was an accident.
Mm.
And so,
sorry.
Yeah, no.
we're not getting off of this one. So stay. Reggae at the roots. That was your
For me, that was my first love. That's what brought me. That's where I expressed myself through dance a lot. Was through dance hall, and of course, hip hop and R&B. Like that's just a given. Mm-hmm. But I loved dance hall in a way. It's just the way they rode the rhythm and the way they. Their cadences were and the way they hit every part of the beat and the way they would, the melody and just all the flavor. Like it just, it snatched my soul every time.
Mm.
Every time.
So that kind of climb in the DJ world is obviously, we both know what it looks like. It's unique.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen very often.
No.
So what was going on? What was why did it work so well for you?
I think because I had no expectations. I it wasn't something that I was like, hey, I'm going to be a DJ and this is where I want to go and this is what it's going to be. I think for me, ultimately, it was so much fun. It was another medium that involved music where I could express myself. Yeah. I can self-identify and where I could be myself and I could make people happy. Mm-hmm. That's a huge part of who I am, is just wanting people to be happy and feel good. Like, you know, and people always used to say, like, my government name is Shanice. They would always used to say, Shanice, you are one in a million. Mm. Like, I've never met anybody that just wanted everyone to feel good. You know what I mean?
When they say that, what do you think? How do you take that?
It means a lot to me. Mm. Because at this stage in my life, impact is more important than profits for me. Like, of course, it's a business and, you know, you want to be successful, whatever that may look like to you. But to me, success is impact. It's what are people going to say about you when you're no longer here? Mm. Because if we think about the greats like Michael Jackson, like, nobody talks about his bank account. Yep. Nobody's like, oh, my God, Michael was so wealthy. You know what I mean? It was more so the impact he had generationally. Yep. And nobody talks about, you know, people's bank accounts when they're gone. They talk about the type of person they were.
Yep.
And ultimately, for me, it's just, that's the most important thing.
That, you know, when you're playing giant shows and you're traveling and, you know, being a big name, can you get into just that feeling when you're playing? And either you you have the crowd like in the palm of your hand, you're about to take them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, for me, I'd get goosebumps knowing what was about to happen.
Yeah.
Explain that. Was that something that for me, like I chased it. So I wanted that feeling, like, every time I played.
Yeah.
That feeling, like, how do you kind of shape that conversation?
I think when I'm on this stage and me and the crowd are together, because it is, we're a team.
Yeah.
It's not just I'm this figure up on the stage doing this thing and everybody's admiring me like, ooh, ah. That's not how I see it. I see it as it's almost like, it's like this cohesive mosaic collage of, like, just different moving parts. You know, if I have my band, each one of those instruments is a piece of that collage sonically. And I'm a piece of it. The crowd and each person in the crowd, how they're reacting, my DJ. Everybody's just, like, we're part of this, like, beautiful mosaic, like, masterpiece sonically. So for me, it's just when I'm up there and I, quote, unquote, have the crowd in the palm of my hand, it's more so remembering that I have a responsibility to be very careful with how, you know, I come across to them and making sure that my intentions are pure and that I'm giving them the very best of me at this specific point in time. And making sure that I'm creating a moment that has never existed before to them. I don't care if they've seen Usher. I don't care if they've seen Alicia Keys. I don't care if they've seen the great Muhammad Ali float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. When you're in front of me, it's something you have never, ever felt before. And once that performance ends, I disconnect from that moment completely. It's the weirdest thing. So I'm not even sincere anymore. As much as people are coming up to me and oh my God, it's like I'm Shanice in that moment, whether they know it or not.
Why do you think that is? Was that a conscious thing, or is that just the reaction that you've just, that's how you operate?
I think it's to keep me humble, to keep me grounded,
because
I never want to get lost in whatever people call it, fame, attention, whatever it is that people, you know, ends up fueling this monster in us that is our ego. Our ego does serve a purpose. It absolutely does serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. That purpose for me is served on the stage, and I leave it there. Mm-hmm. It does not come off the stage with me. Mm-hmm. Because I think for someone to actually come to my show or to grab me after a performance and say, wow, you inspired me, or I've never felt like that, or God, I didn't know that about African history, or whatever it is, whatever their takeaway is, for them to even share that with me, I think is so special that to allow my ego to impede upon that connection, that human connection, mm-hmm. that spiritual connection, that divine connection would be a great disservice, I think, to God. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's different. Mm-hmm. It's almost like not two different people, but you know, it's like this presence and then you just can bring it back to
And I think when I was younger, it wasn't always so easy because when you're younger, your ego is just a raging beast.
Drives.
Yeah. Right? Because you're learning and you're growing and you're making mistakes. And so when you're young, it's great. It's okay.
Yeah.
Right? But I think the older I've gotten, it's just recognizing, one, how precious these moments are. Mm-hmm. I cherish them so mm-hmm. much more.
Yeah.
And I recognize that to be able to make impact in the way that I do is, it's a blessing from the Most High, whoever that is for you, the universe, whatever, right? It's the ultimate blessing. And I'm just paying homage to the greatest creator of all time, the GOAT, the real GOAT. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's happening after high school? The DJ thing is like after high school or during high school?
During high school and also coming into my early 20s.
Okay.
So DJing's going great, you know.
School's done, you're like whatever.
Graduate. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you know what?
And full-time DJ?
Making money. So I'm like, let's see where this takes me.
Yep.
And then I remember playing a big party. And I remember I was playing this party and I remember that it was very chaotic in the venue. And there was just this eerie feeling. And I remember my mentor, Blackout Ranks. I remember him coming in that night. And I remember hearing him. I'd gotten off the stage to go get a drink or something. Or probably smoke some weed at the time. And I heard he has a very, very distinctive voice. So I remember hearing him and thinking, where is he? Like, you know what I mean? So I can go hail him up. And I remember before I got the chance to hail him up, he was gone. But I was at this venue. And it was very chaotic. Fights were breaking out everywhere. And I mean, it was just the weirdest energy, and shots actually started firing. Someone started shooting the party up. And I'm like trying to get out of there now at this point. And I'm on my way to my car and a very prominent promoter stops me and goes, yo, Blacka was killed. And I was like, it didn't really register to me at first. And all these things are going on. And I'm like, so kind of gather myself, and he tells me again, he goes, Blacka was stabbed to death. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I just heard him. Like, what are you talking about? I literally just heard him. And anyways, I get in the car. He went to go play another party. So I get in the car and race to this other venue. And I get to the other venue, and police have the whole place taped off. And I'm freaking out. And my homie sees that I'm freaking out and goes, listen, we're going to go to our other homie's crib. You need to calm down, right? Because I'm trying to figure out what's going on. We get to my other homie's crib. I get the story. My mentor was murdered. I find out he was murdered by my brother's friend. So, and it's a strange story because my brother's friend was battling like really bad, like psychosis, really bad. Like he had really bad mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And people from the Caribbean don't really acknowledge things like that. Like they don't really, mental health is not like, it's a very taboo conversation. Like therapy is like, we don't go to therapy. Like, what are you talking about? You know? And so he was very sick mentally. And there were some words exchanged. I guess that set him off. And he stabbed him to death. Mm. And I remember in that time period, one, thinking like, I gotta really figure out what I'm doing with myself. Mm. And two, I really gotta change the environment I'm in. Because a lot of people are getting shot. There's a lot of shootings. I'm seeing a lot of people die. Like, and I'm like, this is not normal. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is not normal. And so I stepped away from DJing, and unfortunately, I'd stepped away. I'd never went back.
Mm. How many years? When was... When,
this was in 2013.
Okay.
2013, 2014.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah. So I'd never went back. I never went back. I mean, I went to his funeral and that's when it really hit me. That's when it really hit me. And I never went back. I never went back to those kind of parties. I just never went back. I closed that chapter. DJ Sincere was no more.
Did you, before that moment, were you ever concerned about the environments you were in? Like, was there any, like, flags that you were seeing that you were like, this doesn't fit who I am? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. But I think to a degree, I kind of was oblivious in a way because I was so in love with the artistic part of it. Like, dancing to me was, up until that point, DJing to me was just, it was my world. Mm. Like basketball was as a teenager. It was my world. I really thought I was going to be in the WNBA. And I was good. Like, these things were my world. And I was so passionate about them that, unfortunately, it put up this veil and blinded me to a lot of, like, the darkness in the community that I was in. Mm. But when my mentor was murdered, it was a really big wake-up call for me.
What kind of mentorship was it? You know, is this somebody that helped you musically? Was it just a sounding board? Like, what was the big connection?
Yeah. So one, he ignited this flame of hey, you are a DJ. Explore that.
Yeah.
Right. And then two, he definitely was like a coach through my sound career. Like, this is how you hold a microphone. Mm. This is how you engage crowd.
Cool.
You know, this is how you build energy. This is how you build the energy through the songs you're selecting. Mm-hmm. This is how you select songs that have the crowd, you know what I mean, just on this high.
Riding, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Unexpected though, hey? Like,
oh my God.
Just to walk down into a basement and just... And it puts you on a path.
That's it. Mm. So I know the purpose he served in my life all these years later.
Yep.
But, you know, when he was murdered, I just...
Is it?
Man, I closed that chapter.
So then where did you start going? Once that chapter was closed, what was your... I'm guessing there was a lot going on in your life, so...
Yeah, you know what? Unfortunately, I went down a couple wrong alleys.
Yep.
And made some terrible decisions. Mm. Did some terrible things. Mm. Things that spiritually I'm still healing from. Mm. And... through that, Sincere, the artist, was born. Hmm. And she was emerging to tell a story unlike any other story ever told.
That those days when you were down, could you have seen where it was going to go?
God, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I spent a good portion of my life in hell. I mean, people just see me as this prominent figure. Oh my God, your life is great. Even people I was related to. Your life is so great, you know? And I was taught to always be so strong. I think that's why I internalized everything. I thought that was being strong.
Yeah.
But it was slowly chipping away at me. Mm. Piece by piece by piece by piece. I was, and then that turns into depression. Depression turns into self-sabotage and suicidal thoughts. And, you know, I went through a period of, you know, being suicidal. Like, it was just, I'd been in the dumps. Like, I'd just been in the, it was very dark. Couldn't see any way out of where I was. I was navigating so many things, like sexuality and, you know, my daddy issues and my mommy issues and the issues my mom was projecting on me from her trauma and her childhood. And, you know, there was so much trauma in my family and everyone projecting their hurt and their pain onto each other and no one dealing with that. And me trying to navigate that and knowing that God was calling me to heal. And then I understood that, you know, as I was going, like I was just being pulled. God was slowly like throwing me this life raft. As I was drowning, there would be these moments. And Sincere the artist was that life raft for me. Mm. That just, so I tell people music saved my life. I don't want to sound like all like everyone says that cliche or whatever, yeah. but it really did. It was really that life raft for me.
What was the, you know, when you're going through all that, I'm guessing you were being an introvert.
Yes.
And there wasn't a lot of people around.
There was.
To help?
No.
No.
Surprisingly, mm-hmm. No one.
It's just you.
Yeah.
That life raft, what were you starting to see? What was changing to you actually realize that it could be a life raft?
I realized on record I could say things I couldn't say to the people that I care for, my family. There's so much I wanted to say. I wanted to say, you hurt me. Mm. Or why are you hurting me? Or why are you not acknowledging that my pain? Or how come you don't see me? And I could say these things on wax. Mm-hmm. I could talk to the record. I could be in the booth, and no matter how I was feeling, I could express that. And once I expressed it, I could let it go. And then slowly, that was that life raft. Mm. And I slowly began to heal. Mm. And I was growing as a person through my artist. So I began learning about myself through the songs I was making.
Were you writing everything too?
Everything.
So was writing a newfound passion, interest, skill set?
Yeah.
So you were just writing everything out of your head?
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I mean, it began with poetry for me. I'd write little poems in my little, I had this legal notebook that, you know, the lines in it, and jot down a couple lines. Ooh, that's the most profound thing anyone's ever said, right?
And that's where you were kind of, that's where it was going. It was like poetry. It was just a way to kind of have some thoughts written down.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so. Someone called it maybe journaling even.
Yeah.
Just kind of expressing what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And it just turned into music.
Almost because there was no other way it could go, right? Just with such a musical background, it was just, it's not an evolution, but it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a natural progression. Mm-hmm. I mean, in hindsight, looking back, I could say it's honestly a natural progression. Mm-hmm. And though my birth father wasn't in my life, he had one of the most phenomenal male vocals ever.
No way.
Never heard before, but he was a phenomenal singer, right?
How did you, was it on wax or how did you, was he just,
I just have it? Like faint, in the short time he was around, I could just hear him sing.
Yep.
It's the only thing I can hear. It's just he would sing and have like the most beautiful voice. Mm.
Mm-hmm. So just, did that give you confidence knowing that this, the direction you were going, that there might be something in you that could come out?
I didn't see the connection, oddly enough. I didn't see the connection because I was disconnected from him for my whole life. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I mean, he was a pimp in the 80s. So, I mean, in that era, like, it was crazy in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't a pimp by choice, apparently, for what my mom tells him. My mom's like, you know, I was his wife. I was the woman he was in love with. But women would just fall all over him, like, please. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? And I thought, I mean, just even growing up as a young girl and hearing these stories is just really weird to kind of try and understand. And ultimately, that life would lead him to drugs, right? And now my mom says someone laced his cigarette. There was like another pimp or someone in the back in the day that was just very jealous of who he was. And they called it Cocoa Puffs. So they laced his cigarette and he smoked it. And that was it, right? And it's like hearing these stories, right? I'm like, you know, my mom would say, you know, you were a baby. And he was the most beautiful, loving man that I had ever known in my life. The most kind, compassionate to me anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember not seeing him for weeks and him coming back. And I'm holding you as a baby. And he looked crazy. And I remember he took these drugs out of the bag, slammed them on the table, and just started snorting them up his nose. And he slammed a stack of money on the table and said, I can't be here. And left. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. And so this is the beginning of my childhood. Right? And so there was so much that I would ultimately grow up thinking that my sister's dad was my dad, who was... he would end up becoming addicted to crack cocaine it's that era of the late 80s, mid to late 80s, where crack cocaine was various flowing through, you know, the West and destroying a lot of decimating families, you know, across the world. Well, the world, really, the globe. And so, you know, my sister's father, I really thought he was my birth father. And, you know, he was a terrible man. Terrible, terrible man. Very, very, very abusive. So I grew up watching my mom be abused by this man and was conflicted at the same time because I thought he was my dad. And so, you know, these things, just growing up, like I realized later in my life that how unnormal these things are, you know, and how traumatic these things are for a child. But it, like, that's when I began to internalize fear. Yeah.
And did, when you started internalizing it, when was that happening? You know, when you were in the depths of your, at the bottom there?
I think for as long as I can remember, even as a small child, I think that plays a part in the in why I didn't speak for the first few years of my life. There's things I don't remember very much from my childhood because, again, I think I blocked it out.
Yep. But
the things that I remember are kind of chilling. Like, I remember, to this day, I don't know if it was a dream, but I remember, like, sleeping in this room in a house. And I remember being very dark, but I remember feeling like there was this monster in the closet. And I don't know if that monster was my mom's partner. At the time, my sister's father, but it would snatch me and I'd just be terrified. Like, so I know I was internalizing a lot of the things around me at a very young age.
So the writing, so it starts at poetry and then where does it start going?
Well, it starts with poetry and then it goes into freestyle. And I just start kind of spitting things. I just start kind of rhyming. And I was trash. Oh, I was garbage. It stunk. Like, it was just garbage. But it was fun. I mean, it was freeing.
Give you some energy.
Oh, God. It kind of put this battery in my pack. Like, okay, maybe there could be something here. And ultimately, I would start really sitting down and crafting and learning the craft of writing and learning what a 16 is and 8-bar and learning what a bridge is and a course and learning all these things. And over time, I would learn arrangements of songs and all working with a band and arranging my live performances and becoming sort of a conductor in my own right, like very, very James Brown-esque. So that's where I grew up to, those elements come across in my live performance, come across in the music that you hear from me presently.
So what are this early trash days?
Yeah.
What's actually like, is anybody hearing this or is it just, so you're right and then going out?
Oh, I'm confident in the trash. I'm carrying it with me into all these public spaces.
So what does it look like as you're, you're trying to create awareness and build a brand? So what were you doing?
Making mistakes. I didn't know what I was doing. I made a ton of mistakes. I set myself back a lot because I didn't have the knowledge that I needed, because I didn't take the time at certain parts to learn what I needed to know. So I really just failing towards success.
Where'd you go? Where were you going to perform? Like, what did it look like?
Oh, God. Any hole or dive bar in the city.
Just like open night thing?
Anything.
Yep.
Anything. We did ended up happening. As young people, we were a little more ambitious than most, you know, teenagers. So we would throw our own parties.
Okay.
We'd throw these parties and fund them ourselves, and then we put shows on. We eventually started making a little money. We would bring international acts that we could afford. And then we would perform with them. And then we started doing showcases in the city and then started growing. Like, originally, I kind of skipped something. I started out in a 6-part group.
Okay.
My sister, my younger sister, she was an R&B vocalist. There was, like, a couple producers. The producers rapped as well. And that's how we started. We would play, like, colleges and wherever we could. And ultimately, as time passed, you figure out who's a hobbyist and you figure out who's taking it serious. And so out of all of us, I'm the only one still doing it.
No way.
And I mean, I knew it then. And when we're on stage, there was just a difference. There was a difference when I performed versus anybody else.
Yeah.
Right? People always said, like, what are you doing in a group? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I'm a loyalist. I'm like, what do you mean? These are my people. This is a family. What are you doing?
What was the style? Like, what did it sound like?
Ooh, all over the place.
Yeah.
I really didn't have a sound. Mm. I didn't have a lot of original tracks of my own. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of group music. It was very experimental.
Yep.
And there was something there. There was hints of genius, but it needed to be refined. It really needed to be refined a lot. And it needed focus.
Mm-hmm.
It was very all over the place.
Yep.
You know, it was very, very infused and like somewhat confusing at times and chaotic, but I was developing as an artist.
Did you know that when you were kind of in the chaos?
No. I'm like, this is fun. We're having fun, right?
Yeah.
You start getting attention though when I start separating myself from the pack.
Yep.
I start taking it more seriously. I start learning the business,
mm-hmm.
learning that this is a business. I start doing artist development. Okay, I start really logging some serious hours on the professional side of things, and I refine my sound. I take more control over my sound.
What'd you do? What is that actually? What were your like cues to take you on that path that you were just like, how'd you refine it?
I'd made a lot of mistakes that set me back, that hurt me. And I wanted more. And I knew that I'm like, you have something so unique and so special, but you got to figure it out. Because there's too much going on. You got to refine it down to this thing. Not that you have to be or do one thing, but you got to focus. You got to focus people's attention to this one thing that's going to draw them in. And ultimately, at the time, I just didn't know. I didn't know how to put that into words. It was very hard for me.
It still sounds hard to like. that's a big task to accomplish.
And I didn't know that then. But oh God, it was a struggle for me.
Mm.
So I went to a lot of, you know, bedroom studios trying to record and scraping the change together that I could to try to put something together. And I'd had these moments of greatness. And I've had these moments that just were trash. They were just garbage. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of it messed with my head and my self-esteem at times. And I questioned what I was doing. Like, should I do this? Should I be doing this? Am I meant for this? And oh God, in hindsight, looking back, like everything was a test and everything was honestly a stepping stone toward my greatness,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Even if I didn't understand it, so.
In those moments of self-doubt,
mm-hmm.
what is it that keeps you going? Is it just that this like, is it work ethic, perseverance, stubbornness, trust? Like what is it? Is it all of it?
I think it's all of it, but mainly I would say a lot of it is faith.
Mm.
I think it's because I mean, I'm very spiritual. So I think just God extending that lifeline to me.
And then if he does that,
mm-hmm.
you got to put in work in beside that, right?
Yes.
There's like, it's not all,
no,
it's not all like up. It's, you know,
oh,
it's work.
Oh, it's far from up.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, you think I'm just going to give you this? Oh, you think just because you're talented, you're not going to have to work?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Oh, my, the hours I logged in studios recording like music that never came out.
Mm-hmm. It's cost you money.
Oh.
It's time.
Oh, my God. I remember I did artist development at this studio. I won't say their name.
Yeah.
But I won't say their name, but I'd met the owner. And I remember up to that point, I was like, oh, God. I'm like, God, this is so hard. I have no team. I'm like, I need direction. I'm like, I need help. I need something. So I reached out to the studio on a whim and connected with the owner. He told me, come in. Prominent guy, you know, owned a studio in Universal, out in Universal, in LA, Universal Canada, and worked with a lot of different people at Universal Canada and did a lot of things for film, scored a lot of film, and just a really, really amazing guy in music, right? Yeah. Older. So I meet him, tell him my story. I end up crying the first time I meet him after telling my story. And he's like, you know what? He's like, I see something so great in you. And he goes, you know what? I'm going to develop you. And he's like, I want you to come here. He's like, I have some interns and, you know, producers and songwriters. He goes, you're going to work with them. We're going to work and put together your first album. He's like, we're going to do this first song. And he said to me, two things. why should people listen to you? What is the thing that separates you from everybody else? And it was so hard for me to focus this and narrow this down, right? What made me unique? I'm like, it was so like, I don't know. It was like one of the most challenging questions. And I realized it's because I didn't know myself. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to say at that time. So how could I say it? And then he said, the song we made at the time was called Dirty Mind. And he said, this song here is the worst song you have ever made to date. And that always stuck with me. So I spent 2.5 years there developing. And I created all these, the best music up at that point, the best music I'd ever made. And I put together an album that, you know, when people heard it, they were like, God, this is going to be the craziest thing that's ever come out from a Calgary artist ever, or Canadian artist, let alone. I'm like, the different elements, the way, you know, how I developed, how I was writing music at the time and expressing. And then the confidence, I was stepping more into my confidence. But during that time of artist development, the producers and songwriters I was working with really stifled my creativity. Didn't want to let me express my ideas and, you know, what I felt. And so it kind of made me insecure creatively. Like I sort of retreated into my shell a bit. And I thought, you know, they can play instruments. I'm like, oh God, they've got to know more than I know. And ultimately, I was so wrong. I was so wrong about that then. But what ended up happening is I said, you know what? This is an opportunity. Suck it up and make the best out of it. So I try to push through that and finished up the album. And we started booking shows. Now, these producers and singers, they became my live band. And stepping on stage, I knew that's where I really won. I was different. I was a force. I just had that always from the beginning. I had this thing. I had this light that was just like, when this electricity came through me and into a crowd, it was unlike anything else, you know? And it's the way it felt for me. But ultimately, that comes with attention. That comes with money, these live shows. And other people's egos just started raging. You know, they wanted to use my likeness to create their own brands and their own bands, but still bleed me dry and not allow me any artistic, creative expression of my own. And then I remember shooting a music video. It was my first full production ever.
So it was a big thing.
Oh my God. Massive. It was massive. And I remember the idea was we were recreating this platoon scene from this movie. And it was so exciting, but I was robbed of the happiness of that moment because I'd went out, I'd put my money together, I'd saved my money. And I remember bringing the final cut to the studio. And I remember showing the owner and like his publicist, the lady that worked there. And this is when I realized they were really trying to control my likeness. They were angry as hell that I shot that music video. And this is when I was like, what's going on here? Because I'm like, I didn't sign anything. And I started learning. This is when I'm like, you know, the music business is really starting to kick in. And ultimately, we ended up parting ways and that album never released.
No way.
And they held it hostage.
So like all the crazy music industry stories.
And I remember feeling like, I remember again, back in that hole, like, why does this keep happening to me? Like, I remember just feeling like, I don't know. I think, is this for me? Maybe it's not for me. And I remember it was me and my DJ at the time, and I was going through this, and I thought he was someone who was loyal to me. Ultimately, he would end up siding with them and end up going behind my back, trying to steal things from me. And I remember ultimately at the time I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to do things bigger than I ever have ever done it. And I had no idea how. I just remember sitting on the floor, on the carpet, like bummed out, just trying to find the spirit. And I just said, you know what? I'm gonna make it my way on my terms. And I never looked back then. Mm. And I look back in that, on that moment in hindsight, and I was so angry at everybody. I was so hurt and so angry. But in hindsight, I look back and said, that was the best moment of, that was the most significant moment of my career. Mm. Because I had the opportunity to develop as an artist, and that made me a monster today.
Mm. Crazy.
Don't regret it.
So when you kind of figure that out, after you're kind of down in the dumps and you're like questioning it all.
Yeah.
And then it, the light comes back on. You're like, I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Oh my God.
Now you're smiling.
Oh God. Now let me tell you, there were long nights. You still, it does
it's,
not.
It's not a quick switch.
It did not get easier. It got harder because now I'm wearing all these different hats and I'm learning how to wear these different hats. And so I'm going to seminars and I'm learning about the music business.
Cool.
And I'm going to all these, you know, I'm going to these, wherever I can go to a workshop and listen to a panel of industry professionals. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning online, and I'm again, I'm failing my way towards success. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sharpening my skills. I'm really taking the time to sharpen my skills. And so I'd never really had like a solid body of work. Like I was really trying to still figure out my sound. So it wasn't until I got to my EP Ghetto Gabby where I kind of structured a sound. And I kind of, it was my first actual project where I had a rollout and I marketed it.
Mm.
And the impact, I know a standout record on that one was Posers at the time, and now Ghetto and Real, very standout tracks from that project that people just love, that are timeless. And I remember being so proud. I'm doing a release party and all these things, and that project took me to places I never thought I could go. And then from there, I just kept releasing. I kept my foot on the gas till I got to my first album.
When was that?
That was August of last year.
Oh, it's like fresh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So now what does it all feel like?
Oh, full circle. My first album, I realized there were so many elements from the album that didn't release. There were so many elements that I kept with me and just sharpened.
Mm.
And, you know, my debut album, Tabula Rasa, which is blank slate. It's Italian for blank slate. And it's really just clearing the canvas and starting anew. Mm. So in order to bring myself to create this album, I had to remove any preconceived notions I had of myself. I'd realized up until that point, I had to learn who I was. You know, who I wanted to be. I was a sum total of what my mom thought and what this person thought. Mm. And what, you know, all these people that had influence on me. And so it was time to take my power back and discover who I was. But I had to clear away all these preconceived notions. So I started learning about the history of my people. It's not something my family ever spoke about, ever. It's not a conversation I ever had with anybody around me who was Black.
Why is that, you think?
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's because most Caribbean parents are, you know, the schooling they get is very colonial based. It's not very, you know, it begins with slavery. We don't learn about our true history. We don't learn about the ancient Africans of antiquity and their role in the, you know, their role in the modern world as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing that in those ancient times they had irrigation ditches. They were astrologers, the first astrologers, you know, dealt in agriculture, you know, copper miners, like doing all these things,
mm-hmm.
right? Prior to anyone ever doing these things that, you know, knowing that at one point in time in history, the richest man in the world was Mansa Musa. That's a Black African king. And why he was rich, what made him rich, gold. So when thinking why they colonized Africa the way they did, how the sub-Saharan slave trade and the transatlantic slave trade, what that did to our people, what slavery really did to our people, but understanding who we were prior to slavery, right? Understanding the prominence and significance of Ethiopia, how it's below the heavens, and you know, the ancient people of the, you know, that time, the Nubians, how powerful they were spiritually, how they operated internally, and that intuition, that's how they understood how the world operated. Mm. The creators of the first calendar ever. Like, people didn't know these things, right? And even if we're to a figure like Harriet Tubman, it blew my mind that so many of my people didn't know who she was and her contributions to her people during her era, right? Her fearlessness, her bravery, you know? And, yeah. And there's so many things, like the Willie Lynch letter, like understanding that lynching comes from this man's name. And not understanding the magnitude of that letter he read on the bank of the James River in the 1700s, where he said, "This is a manual that I kid you not, you will use to keep your slaves in line. This, the things in this manual will keep these people psychologically enslaved for some 500 years. Our ancestors, the Greeks, will be jealous of what we have, you know, accomplished in our time." And understanding just so many, the psychological warfare declared on our people. I had to go learn all these things that I never learned certain things in school.
And you're just, it feels like when you want to learn something, you just like... You get into it.
Yeah, there was something that was, I ultimately was God pulling me back to who I was.
Just your like core, to your root, like just.
Yeah, because I mean, ultimately these things are in me. Mm-hmm. They were already in me. I just forgot. Mm-hmm. Just like they say, you choose who your parents are before you get here. Mm. These things are in us, we know. Right, but we forget on this journey because it's one hell of a journey. Mm-hmm. Right, we think we're a sum total of the 90, if you're lucky, 100 odd years we get here in this human experience. But the spirit, energy never dies, it's recreated. So we are coming from, we have lived these lives and explored these different paradigms and have all of this knowledge, but we forget. Mm. When we become so engulfed in a certain experience, we become engulfed in that experience. So we forget all of these things. And so ultimately I had to unlearn and relearn who I was in order to get to who I needed to be.
Going, being on that journey, now what you're creating now, it just has like energy, depth, passion, like it's your thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's all of it.
You know, and I'm like, okay, ooh, I know my why now.
And then what?
I know what it is. And so for me, it's the then what is letting life unfold as it is. Mm. You know, okay, people have goals and all these great things, right? I love it. But I'm kind of riding this wave. And I'm just seeing where this wave's going to take me. Mm. I mean, I could end up in anywhere in the world, right? But the point is, I have to stay true to who I am.
Yep.
It has to be authentic. Mm-hmm. Can't be based off of the Western culture's idea of what liberation is or what they think success is. It has to be on my terms, you know?
Yep.
And I have to trust in Source and know that Source is going to lead me only to where I need to be, exactly where I need to be. At the time I need to be there, which is why I'm here with you having this conversation.
Mm-hmm. That when you understand your why, for me, it's when I think about that, it's almost like an unlock. Mm. You know, like when you actually, because then you're not making trash. You know, it's very, I don't know if you just accept more things or if you know the direction, that you trust the direction, but as soon as you understand your why, things get interesting.
Oof, that's when you're living. Mm-hmm. You're more open.
But hard to get there.
Well, yeah.
Like you're, you know, all our stories are different.
Right.
Yours has some like, some downs to figure out.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, my downs might look different from yours,
for
but
sure.
We all have been in the dumps.
Yep.
We've all experienced hard things and struggles. And you know, and I think in the Western world, in the modern world, it's so weird that we compare our pain bodies against each other. I find that to be so strange. When hurt is hurt. Mm. And then it's such a weird way to look at, to justify, you know, my woes versus your woes. Because ultimately, the point of it all is just to heal those woes so we can help heal the collective world to make it a better place, mm-hmm. right? For the generations to come. Because everything grows and goes. So when it's our time to go, and whatever is growing at that point, hopefully it's better for them, right? And you know, my life path number is 2, and 2 represents balance. And so when you hear my story and the story I've told you, right, it's very much so finding that balance for me, that balance between, you know, the different, the polarity in my life. You know, I've had these very high moments and these very low moments, mm-hmm. but it's just trying to find that balance between it all, mm-hmm. right? And stay open enough to accept whatever is.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is, you know, balance is interesting, right? Just some people need it, others don't. Mm-hmm. I think being open is an interesting perspective, you know, just being open to what's going to happen to try and find that balance.
Yeah.
It's cool. So your musical path right now, what are you making? What's like, what's at the, how would you... For anybody that's listening that has never heard you, how do you explain it?
Rap funk phenom. I think right now I'm doing something that's historical for music, especially Canadian music, especially for Black Canadian music.
How so?
Well, because no one's ever infused rap and funk in a way like I am.
Cool.
A way that's, I'm gonna give you the vibe, but I'm gonna feed your soul at the same time. You gonna get so much in a short span of time. I'm gonna challenge your beliefs while taking you on a high and making you feel good, make you wanna dance.
Cool.
All at the same damn time.
Mm.
And it's gonna make you feel different things. And it's gonna make you wanna be more for yourself and more for the world.
Mm.
So I think that's, yeah.
Have you, to be able to say it like that,
mm-hmm.
it's taken a long time to get there.
Oh.
Oh. You and I can sit here and you say it so like eloquently and like it just rolls out, but I'm like, fuck, that took a while.
I always say it, it's like, you know, a sprinter has to trip tons of times before, you know, they really catch their stride.
Yep.
And so I had to fall repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just, like, this clumsy person, mm-hmm. like, just falling and face-planting every time. Like, just boom, dush, boom, bam, 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 like, you know? And, yeah, to be able to even articulate myself in the way that I, you know, that I am. And mm-hmm. so, but, I mean, it's all part of the journey. And so, stay open and embrace it. Yeah.
Well said. This has been really cool.
Oh, God. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I end the show with one question. Mm-hmm. When I say Calgary, where's your head go?
Oh, my God. Home. Oh, my God. You know, people have different ideas about what this place is. But for me, it is truly home. And I've hated it at times because I felt like it's rejected me, you know, at times. But, oh, God, I developed here. I grew here. I cultivated my sound here. Mm-hmm. I loved here. I had broken hearts here. I had so many of my firsts here. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's home. Sweet home.
Through and through. Thanks for doing this.
Oh my God. Thank you for having
me. I'm catching you at a very interesting time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fun for me to watch what you do, where you go. Now the sound changes. So this is why I really love this show, because I get to sit down with amazing people at moments in their life, and then I just get to hang out and watch what they do. So this is it's gonna be fun to watch and listen to what you pull off.
Likewise, thank you for building a platform such as Calgary Sessions, because it helps amplify our voices, and then on top of it, you're a great representation of what's here and what's to come, and you give people a different perspective of that. And this was very healing for me as well. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.